Hello friends, welcome to another episode of the Silicon Dreams on Radio Zindagi, 1550 AM. This is your show host, RJ Sonia, and today we are going to take a deep dive into what's happening in the world of Web3 with an amazing personality, Miko. Miko has been on our show a year back, and I'm so excited to be hosting him again. And I can't just wait to go to Miko as we start these conversations on what's happening in the world of Web3. Miko, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us. Miko, for the people listening on in their cars or for the people listening to the show for the first time, could you please introduce yourself? What do you do? What's your role? How did you even get into this wild west world of Web3?
Yeah, so I'm a partner, managing partner with a venture capital firm called Gumi Cryptos Capital. We're on our second fund, which is $110 million, and we invest in early stage companies that are in the Web3 and crypto blockchain movement.
Thanks, Miko. Miko, how did you even get into Web3? When did you start investing? And what are your early memories of this particular sector and area? And what were you doing before that?
Yeah, I come from a very strange direction, which is I come from open source developer tools. So my first job in Silicon Valley was working at a company called Sun Microsystems. And we were introducing this programming language called Java. And that was my first job, is being a developer evangelist for the Java programming language. I think if you study academic computer science, you'll probably study Java. It's really become sort of one of the dominant programming languages for students. So it's a very interesting language. It's still working, doing things like operating banks, and it's operating telcos. And so Java is still a very, very meaningful and powerful language in programming. So, you know, I got my first introduction to Silicon Valley through this kind of programming language and ultimately open source software world. So I spent, you know, decades in the open source developer tools landscape. And one of the things that caught my eye was that open source really never was about money. There was no money in it, right? Open source was really about, it was driven by consent, right? Which is basically, it was the culture of, please use my free software. My free software is better than your
paid software.
Yeah, it's better than your paid software, right? Like over the time, we saw things like Windows Azure Cloud, right? Which was really Satya Nadella's project inside of Microsoft. They converted from running on top of Windows NT made by Microsoft to Linux, which is open source, right? So when you see open source software penetrating deeply into the enterprise and becoming sort of the dominant form of software, you know, like you see these incredible projects like Facebook Llama, the, you know, large language model, it's sitting in open source, right? So when you really look at the history of open source, you really understand that open source is the eventual repository of the best software in the world. So we just have to wait, and open source software will just keep getting better and better until it's the best. And so that was my attitude. And so when I started seeing projects like Bitcoin or projects like Ethereum, I started seeing the opportunity to rebuild the financial infrastructure of the planet, much like we had collectively rebuilt the communications infrastructure of the planet. So the internet effectively took advantage of existing communication infrastructure, right? You know, services like DSL that runs digital on top of fixed line infrastructure, you know, on top of just phone wires, right? So that, you know, this idea is that the next layer up becomes the ability to rebuild the communication infrastructure. And then on top of that, we can rebuild the financial infrastructure of the world, right? So, you know, eventually projects like Bitcoin and Ethereum are just examples of open source software. But the thing that was stunning was that whereas before, open source software had nothing to do with money, and in fact, everyone in it was basically poor, you know, all of a sudden, open source software projects started printing their own money, right? Which is, of course, an incredibly stunning event. And so for me, obviously, this caught my eye, and I really became excited about the potential for what I think of as open source money, right? Which is this idea, or open source financial infrastructure, which is really about transplanting the antiquated financial infrastructure of the world and creating a new infrastructure. I mean, just a quick example is that Ethereum has advanced more in the past 6 hours than ACH has done in the past 60 years, right? So like, you know, when you talk about the speed of innovation, the speed at which this infrastructure will become better is, it's just unprecedented, right? It's really, really ridiculously fast.
Absolutely. And even I started my career, by the way, as a Java developer. So I think, you know, that's a common.
That's wonderful. I'm happy to hear that.
We see Vinod Khosla, you know, still really empowering the Silicon Valley startup ecosystem. It's with Khosla Ventures, you know, they are betting on so many entrepreneurs and helping them take their ventures to the next level. But yes, even I actually love Web3. I look at blockchain as this big open source ecosystem that empowers people, but now it goes beyond just software too, because, you know, things can be decentralized and there are so many opportunities being created.
Well, I love that you mentioned Vinod Khosla, because, you know, your audience may know that Vinod was actually founder of Sun Microsystems, you know, and really one of the most central figures in the birth of the Java programming language, of the ascendancy of Sun. And if at one time, like, people are going to scratch their heads and say, what is Sun Microsystems? I can tell you that there was a very serious project inside of Sun to acquire Apple. And it was this project was called Snapple. And it was basically, at the time, the Sun market capitalization was so large and Apple's market capitalization was so small that this became a very serious effort to, we engaged bankers. We were going to acquire Apple. So I just want to let the audience know that Sun Microsystems was not a joke at the time, you know, and this is a very serious company. And of course, that is how, you know, Khosla attained his riches and fame. And then since then, he has grown Khosla Ventures to an absolutely legendary venture capital firm. So he's one of the pillars of the Indus entrepreneur community and one of the pillars of global venture capital. He's definitely like incredible person.
Absolutely. And that is like coming from Java, by the way, I do tend to use an Android phone. I'm not a big fan of Apple. No hatred to anyone out there using Apple. And it's because of the fact that Apple does tend to have a closed ecosystem. And that's what excited me about Web3 too. When I came to Web3, it was like, okay, as you said, right? Like, here's everybody, a community really working together to build things, working together to try and raise the overall standards for the entire community and not for a single person. So the idea of for the community, by the community, that definitely is very prevalent in Web3. With that being said, Miko, I would love to ask you, you know, Web3, it's such a broad term, I feel, right? Like, you know, I feel like a lot of the times people talk about Web3 as, hey, you know, here's Web3 and there's AI and AI is doing better than Web3. But I feel like Web3 actually encompasses AI too, because, you know, we are talking about the next layer of internet or of connected infrastructure on which people can build applications. So as a little bit of a curveball, I would like to ask you this question that, hey, you know, when you are looking at Web3 from your lenses, what does the term Web3 mean to you?
Yeah, so Web3 is very, very simple, right? Which is, what has happened is that there are new protocols, and the new protocols really rely on things like consensus, and they rely on things like cryptography, right? And so the reliance of these new protocols, internet protocols, on cryptography and consensus, really, it's about consent. And consent is really founded on the ability to say no, right? Cryptography is really the internet's ability to say no. So if someone is like, oh, can I spy on your data? Can I steal your data? Can I have your Bitcoins? Like, cryptography is the technology that says no, right? So to me, the ability to say yes actually is born out of the ability to say no. If you can't say no, then you could never have yes, right? So to me, we're rebuilding the trust fabric of the internet, right? Because right now we flipped. It used to be, let's say you're the Google crawler and you're indexing and creating search. The Google crawler has such a naive worldview. The Google crawler goes around the internet and says, it must be true because I read it on the internet. That's what the Google crawler is doing, right? And the thing that is happening is that's less and less and less good, because what's happening is it's actually possible to hire an AI to write landing pages for your website. So your this AI can actually spew 300,000 landing pages to your website, all of which the Google crawler will just innocently index and say, wow, like this is such a big website with such a big content contribution. Like what a great website, right? So it, to me, like this isn't working anymore. The internet as we know it is not working anymore. And that the biggest problem on the internet is security and trust, right? I can go today on the dark web and I can buy one file that has 8 billion name password pairs in it. Like I can buy whoever's listening, I can buy your name and your password, right? And this is just fundamentally wrong. It's broken and it's hopeless, right? So, you know, to me, like what I'm saying is hopeless is not the internet. We cannot throw away the internet. The internet is not hopeless. The security model of the internet is hopeless. It's just, we're just doing it badly, right? So to me, Web3 is very simple, which is we need to fix security, we need to fix privacy, we need to fix trust, right? And the answer is cryptography. Like we have it, the mathematics exist, and cryptography is beautifully protecting online banking. It's working beautifully. We just need to add different mechanisms to manage the cryptography and do a better job protecting people's identity, protecting their data, protecting their privacy, protecting their digital assets, right? Including, you know, crazy things like Bitcoin and Ether, you know, but everything, right? So, you know, including, you know, information and intellectual property assets, like any assets.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, we were talking about the Google crawler, right? Where the crawler or any of like any search engines that we look at. So Google has made such a huge business out of its search engine, right? And then we know we have companies like Facebook. When we were in the world of Web 2, and we obviously with Web 2, we saw a lot of dynamic interactions being added to a once static world of internet. And people started loving it. Like we all spend hours on Facebook, chatting with friends, commenting on pictures and whatnot. And a few years into that, we came across a very popular phrase, right? Where people would say, if it is free, then you are the product, right?
Yes.
And what people don't realize is anytime they are browsing, like we have seen so many things come out of Facebook's case with Cambridge Analytics, for example, right? Where a lot of the data was actually being used to influence people based on their behavioral patterns. And quite possibly, like we would, I don't think, you know, we have enough public information to make an honest statement on this, but there was definitely an implication here that people's behaviors could have been analyzed and further influenced, right, in order
for
to gain their votes.
Yes.
Which is fairly harrowing when you think about it, that, hey, I am innocently browsing the internet, but all of my data, my browsing pattern is being captured. And I used to joke with friends and say that I think Facebook's algorithm probably knows me better than I do. And we were the product. But now we are looking at a new generation of internet where we won't just have more control over our privacy, because honestly, a decentralized internet means we should be able to see where and how is our data being consumed, whatever data I'm giving out. And I should also have more control over it in terms of whether or not I want to give my data to a political party.
So I do want to say this, right, which is that I know at the moment that people are not that sensitive about the privacy of their data, right? So I think that people generally as consumers don't care that much, but we do think that regulators are getting awake. I think GDPR in Europe. So I think that there will be changes, and I think that the changes will ultimately benefit the user because, you know, I did earlier talk about this kind of idea of this sort of feeling that, you know, Facebook gave us Llama into open source, right? So I'm very happy to give them the credit and say, thank you for that. Llama's very nice. I don't know if you know this AI, but it's a lovely AI tool and it's a free gift from Mark Zuckerberg.
And Llama can also be used on, like you don't need very extensive infrastructure to actually start using
Llama. Yeah. So here's the wonderful thing is Facebook is one of the largest consumers of NVIDIA GPUs, and they've trained this core model with many, 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 many millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars of compute training. And now you can just use the model, you know, for free as open source, right? Which is just incredibly fortunate and nice. However, here's what I want to say is that it also turns out that Mark Zuckerberg may have stolen some IP from the Winklevoss brothers, and that there was a lawsuit in which the Winklevoss brothers won. And during the discovery legal section, it turns out that there's a chat between Mark Zuckerberg and I don't know who else, but the chat says something like, do you know the zone between illegal and unethical? He's like, I live in that zone outside of illegal, but inside unethical, right? And this is terrifying, right? Like, this is a very, very bad attitude, right? And I think the scary thing is that it harmonizes with AI crawlers, because the crawlers don't have any ethics, right? Yes. So basically, the crawlers are like, oh, is this data? Can we have this data, right? And the answer to the AI is maybe. Right? Because AI is the technology that says maybe. It just says maybe. So it's sort of, oh, can I have this data? Oh, maybe. I put it in my pocket, right? So it's to me, that's really potentially dangerous, right? Whereas cryptography is the technology that says, no, absolutely not. Like I know, not only reject it, but I forbid it. Like, you're blocked from using this, right? And to absolutely. Me, that's the data that makes that's the capability that makes the internet safe, right? So I think that's very important capability.
So let me ask you this, Mikkel. You have been investing in this space for a few years now, and I would love to ask you that in this year, in 2024, what are some of the trends that you're following, that you see people chasing? Can we chat about that for a minute?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, I just want to really be very strict about trends, right? Which is that trends are maybe the worst thing to happen to crypto, right? Because it drives people to invest in herds, right? So they basically chase narratives. They're chasing stories, right? To me, that is really not investing at all, right? That is really just pure speculation. So the difference between investing and speculation is, investing is you put money in, right? And what you're doing, and this is really getting close to the definition of a security, right? So we do need to be like a little careful about the legal and regulatory definitions, right? But investing is where you want a group of people to actually create something valuable, right? And so you sponsor their creation, right? Like, it's, hey, please use my money to create something useful for the world, right? The concept of speculation is that you buy an asset with the hopes that other people will also buy that asset. This is also called the greater fool theory, right? Which is that you just buy something and you just really hope in hell that like greater fools will come and they'll buy, right? And so to me, like, chasing
narratives— Are you describing the stock market here? No, I'm kidding. Please
go on. Only meme stocks. I'm only describing meme stocks, right? There are stocks that fundamentally produce value, right? Like, if you look at something like NVIDIA, like, they're producing chips, right? Chips are useful, and the chips they're making are extra useful, right? Especially with graphics, and then especially now with AI, right? So, like, to me, as an investor, I very much want to encourage people not to chase stories, right? Because the way that you really invest is you actually study the people who are building, right? Because, you know, one of the reasons to invest in something like NVIDIA is that the founder is still there running the show, right? Like,
oh,
Jensen Huang is still there after so many years of NVIDIA still running the show.
After
it's
two
beautiful
decades,
to see.
He's still
it's
there.
It's beautiful to see. There are very few multi-trillion-dollar enterprises with a founder running. So that it's a tremendous achievement.
Like, Larry and Sergey were younger, much younger than Jensen Huang, and even they decided to, like, you know, get on the board.
Yes. So many people have stepped aside. You know, hats off to Mark Zuckerberg. He's still there. Hats off to Mark Zuckerberg. He's still married, which is another one that is, oh, you never see it, right? So, like, those
so
are
Jensen too. You know, he's
in, those are incredibly rare people, right? Like, the ones that are maybe still running their original companies, right? Like, you know, they're also ones that are quite divorced, like Jeff Bezos, right? Which is, like, hats off to him for still running that company from the beginning to now. And now it's Jesse, right? So he finally handed off to Andy Jesse, right? So, like, you know, he's finally out, but he's also divorced, right? So, like, to me, like, you just are watching, right? You're watching. You're like, okay, who's still there, you know, and who's there with the original mojo?
Absolutely.
I think it's valuable. It's valuable to study the— So when I talk about investing, like, who are you? Who is it? who's doing it, right? Like, pay attention to who's doing it and pay attention to what you believe about the people, right? Because there's so many cases in the crypto world which are rug pulls, right? And so one of the things that's not even just who is it, but why are they doing it? Like, you know, so if you can get a feeling for why somebody's doing something, that will help you a lot, right? So, you know, I have my own YouTube show, and part of the show is about the people behind the crypto, right? And you can look at their face and you can hear their voice and you can be like, do I think this person is a scam, right? And to be perfectly honest, it's so hard. Right. Like, so many people listened to Sam Bankman-Fried and said, oh, yeah, no, that guy's real. Like, that's not a scam. Right. And we were all fooled. Right?
By the way, guys, Sam Bankman-Fried was the founder of FTX. So if you have been following news last year, we had a big bankruptcy filing and, you know, a lot of drama around FTX because like $8 billion were just not being traced anywhere. And right now, SBF is behind the bars. But that's
yes,
Sam Bankman-Fried.
He went to prison.
Yes.
Recently, I think last week was his 32nd birthday, which he spent in prison. So, like, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that humans are easy to be fooled, right? So even if you see the person on YouTube and you hear them and you look at them and you believe in them and they sound incredibly sincere. So how do you protect yourself from that? So first of all, pay attention to the people. Right. Because that will give you some information, because there are some people who are a scam who are just less talented of a scam. Right. And some of those people, when you just see them, you're just like, oh, my God, that is such a scam. Bye bye. Right. And there are crazy people who are investing in tokens where they have no idea who's behind.
Absolutely.
It. And that is almost like a guaranteed what they call a rug pull. Right. Which is you're walking down the hallway and all of a sudden you're sitting on your butt because they pulled the rug out from under you. Right. So that's a rug pull. So, like, if you're thinking about investing in crypto, you know, and I caution you, it's very risky, right? So there's a couple of things you can do to protect yourself. One of which is don't invest more money than you can afford to lose, because it's highly risky, right?
That's true for any high risk investment asset.
It's super
class.
High risk. It's all yes. Super high risk, right? And then the other thing that you should consider is you should consider diversification, right? So if you do invest in crypto, obviously the safest assets tend to be the larger ones. So I would say, you know, the tendency is for Bitcoin to be, you know, a little safer than some crazy, you know, so-called
yes.
shitcoin. So, like, you know, so
Bitcoin has $1 trillion market cap as of now.
That's right. That's right. So it's probably a little safer than whatever your cousin is trying to sell you, you know, and so definitely, so, you know, gravitate towards these larger assets but diversify, you know, for sure. Right. Because any one of these things could potentially be a rug pull. So, like, you know, be careful, diversify, don't invest more than you can lose, you know, just be very careful out there and don't chase narratives, right? Because, like, if you chase a narrative, you're likely a lemming, like you're likely going to go, the whole herd will go off the cliff and you'll go with them, right? Like it's, you really have to understand, like, what do I believe? You know, who's the founder? Why are they, the why is the biggest thing. Like, why are they doing this, right? And, you know, greed or opportunism is not a great reason, right? Because that's the person who will rug pull you. That person will dump on you. You'll lose money. They'll make money, right? It's just them getting your money forever, which is like, that's not great. That's definitely not what you want.
Absolutely. Well, Mikko, you know, we are almost at the end of the show. So what I would like to ask you, especially since we started talking about investments, and also I want the listeners to realize that when you're talking about these investments, it's not just advice for people who identify themselves as investors, right? Like, we are not talking about angels or even like LPs or GPs, you know, putting in hundreds of thousands of dollars into companies and stuff. This is even for the retail investors, because this is sound advice even for someone who wants to just take like $1,000 and put it invested somewhere, right? So before we wrap up this segment, I would like to ask you that, you know, for people who identify themselves as retail investors, how do you think can they actually do this research? Because it's a little hard to, you know, find out all the facts and information. Do you have any advice for people that, hey, you know, these are the obvious red flags that you should look for, or these are some resources that you can look at in order to figure out whether or not the next big game that you're betting on is even a legitimate game to start with?
Yeah, so I think this is that it is exceedingly difficult. I do think that one of the problems with the new market is that it used to be this crazy frontier. But what has happened now is the pros are here, right? And what I mean is that companies like BlackRock have launched their ETF, right? So it means that there are incredibly sharp traders that are now counter trading retail, right? So in a sense, if you're like, oh, this is an attractive opportunity, right? Some professional with some like high frequency trading algorithm is now kind of going against you, right? And they're gonna use things like basically behavioral psychology, right, to counter trade your emotional trading, right? So you're going to be like, oh no, I am losing money, sell, and then they're going to buy, right? So it's very hard to kind of counter trade, right? So the only thing that I think humans can do to outperform these algorithms is really investment instead of trading, right? If you're day trading, if you're flipping coins back and forth every day, like the only thing that will support you in that and give you good results is if you dump on someone else, right? So in other words, you have to get out. It's a game of chicken, right? It's like before it crashes, get out, right? Then you might have a chance of winning. And if the market is going up, then while it's going up, you can continue to play that game, right? But the point is that that game always ends with losers, right? Which is that if the market goes down, everyone gets liquidated, right? So, you know, first and foremost, don't play with leverage. Like, don't do like 10x Bitcoin, or don't do like, I'm taking out a loan, or I'm mortgaging my house so I could, like, do not play with leverage. Like, that's a great way to not only get wrecked, you know, but don't invest more than you can afford. It's too dangerous. So, you know, obviously I know there's people who are kind of a YOLO crypto, you know, like the American dream is out of reach for most people. I know that people want the casino winnings, but like, you know, just please stay safe and, you know, avoid these crazy schemes, you know, avoid any weird word of mouth schemes, like your cousin talking about, I discovered this amazing thing, nobody knows about it. It's like, no, somebody knows about it. And it's not your cousin. Your cousin is not the source of like secret knowledge that's going to make you rich, right? So like, you know, be very scared of that. Like you should definitely consult with reputable sources, you know, and ultimately the truth is what matters, right? Now, can you follow people who have studied this deeply? Like, yes, you can, but you have to be careful, right? Because one of the things that's crazy about following people is prices, right? So if you're following a VC, the VC may have invested in something, but the question you have to ask yourself is, what price did they get and what price do I get, right? Now, if the price you get is close or the same as the price they got, then you may have a benefit to following such a person, right? Yes. But if you're following a person and the price you get is high and the price they got is low, then you lost, right?
You are their exit liquidity.
Yes. So, you know, to me, what I like to say is, you know, DeFi, decentralized finance, produces yield, right? Which is money that's coming in, right? And what I like to tell people is, if you don't know where the yield comes from, it's coming from you. Like, yes, you're the yield, right? Like, you're the one who's giving up money. And the way you lose the money is you exchange good money for bad money. You exchange it, right? So you basically are like buying bad money with good money. And good money is things like Bitcoin or Ether, right? And if you just go ahead and trade that away for some weird thing, right? You might be the yield. You might be giving yield to others. Others may be like laughing all the way to the bank.
Absolutely. And especially when playing risky games like this, I would again like to reiterate what you said earlier, Mikko, right? Like, hey, don't invest more than you can afford to lose. So I have heard stories about people going and mortgaging their houses and trying to buy down something and then just losing it all. It's not a game of gamble. Why would you want to mortgage your house and then go and gamble it out on something else?
It's worse, literally gambling. It's worse than gambling, actually, because if you go to Las Vegas and you spin the roulette, you actually can see that there's a space on roulette where the house always wins, right? So it's 49% you win, 51% the house wins, right? But like, to me, crypto, if you go in there like with that mentality, it could be 99% the house wins, right? You don't even know who's going to be the winner, right? So I would say it's even more dangerous than casino, right? So, you know, and to me, like, the thing that becomes so important, like, I've been thinking about risk, right? And the thing that's interesting is that people can convert risk into non-risk using skill, right? So for example, let's say there are these crazy climbers that climb without ropes, right? Like, they climb up really crazy rock faces and they have no ropes, right? And the thing is that it is risky, right? But for someone who's really good at it, it's less risky, right? So the thing that's happening is that for some people, what's risky is different from what's risky for other people, right? So like, I do think it is important to be careful. And I think, you know, it is, I'm not discouraging you from trying, right? I think everyone should try. And the amount that they should try is something that I call Grand Canyon money, which is if you're standing at the lip of the Grand Canyon, imagine yourself throwing money into the Grand Canyon, right? How much did you throw? How much did you throw into the Grand Canyon? You should invest that much in crypto, right? And why? Why is that a good amount? Because if it's all gone, you won't cry, A. And B, you will learn something, I guarantee. I guarantee you will learn something, right? So if you take the Grand Canyon money and you put it in there and you get rug pulled, that's interesting.
That is your learning.
Now, how painful was that? It was Grand Canyon money. Like you didn't care. Like you're like, what is it? $5? That's fine. $5 is fine. You can start with $5, right? Whatever it is. But don't throw your house in the Grand Canyon.
It's absolutely.
Like, Canyon's very deep. Like, you know, house will go down the river. It's not good.
Yeah, just a brick probably, yes, but not your entire house. Well, Mikko, it was a pleasure having you on the show. Can you please let our audiences know where can they give you a follow and actually even follow your podcast?
I very much appreciate it. All of my socials and my podcasts are all linked from miko.com, M-I-K-O.com. And that's my website. So you go to the website, everything is linked there. So you can basically follow me if you like. You know, nothing I say is investment advice. You know, definitely consult your financial planner, who will probably tell you not to do anything in crypto ever. But, you know, but please do consult a licensed financial advisor, you know, preferably someone who maybe likes crypto, but understands it's risky, right? So like, you know, and your cousin may not be the perfect one.
That's absolutely right. So guys, again, you can find Mikko at miko.com. Mikko is an early stage investor who has invested in a lot of the cornerstone companies that actually make up the Web3 ecosystem today. You can look at his investments and his portfolio at miko.com. You can also follow his podcast where he uncovers what's happening in the world of Web3 with a lot of other founders as well. So Mikko, again, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of the Silicon Dreams, and we hope to have you on our show soon again.
Thank you very much.